Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Today we have something that a few people might call controversial. We're talking about toms. We're talking about deuces. We're talking about $2 bills. I'm Ben.
$2 bills rule everything around me, Ben.
Ooh, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Cream and some money. Mm-hmm. $2 bills, y'all. Noel, it's me, Noel.
And of course, we're joined with our super producer, Casey Pegram. Casey, I'm laughing because off air, I was wondering if we should give you some kind of currency-related nickname for this show.
How about Casey Greenbacks Pegram?
I like that. Yeah, I'm sold.
I'm cool with that. Ben, you know, I only really recently realized that CREAM stands for Cash Rules Everything Around Me.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of that concept, but not just the acronym CREAM. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of all of the multitudes of slang words we have made for currency.
Sure.
Both in the U.S. and abroad.
Scratch.
Yeah. Cheese.
Skrilla.
Cabbage.
Grip.
Yeah, there's grip. A stack, a bill. It's so contextual and so ubiquitous now. And there's such a wide range of slang words that I feel like if you say just a made-up phrase while you're handing someone money, then they will believe that slang for money. So if you and I and Casey were at Dave and Buster's or something.
Well, they have their own currency.
Oh, crap. Yeah, they beat us to that.
Buster Bucks.
Buster Bucks, yeah. Mm. A pale shadow of Ben Bucks, from what I hear.
Agreed.
Objectively.
Oh, big time.
So, but here, like, imagine this. So we're in... you know, we're in some place, I don't know, a ritzy club or something.
How about the Ritz-Carlton?
There we go, literally, ritzy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, well done. So we're at the Ritz-Carlton, and if we pay someone at the hotel counter, and then we say, well, let me throw a couple pony bones your way, and it's like two $20 bills, they're just going to roll with it.
Yeah.
And they may later refer to cash as pony bones, which is kind of morbid.
Yeah, I would maybe be something like, here, let me grease your palm with a couple of these sweet Jim Jams.
Mm-hmm. Jim Jams.
Why not?
I feel like, yeah, I feel like we've established this interesting etymology that's still evolving. But today's episode, as we said, is about something a little controversial in the world of U.S. currency, the $2 bill.
The deuce.
The tom.
Yeah. The tom?
Mm-hmm. That's one of the slang terms for it.
I love it.
I wanted to ask you at the top here, do you have a lot of experience with $2 bills? Do you have a story, or did something happen to you when you were a kid?
All of my life savings are in $2 bills inside of dirty mattresses.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth.
And you save money that you would have otherwise had to spend on cleaning the mattresses.
So. Well, it's also like, you know, they're super rare, right, Ben? So, I mean, they're going to one day be worth well more than $2 a piece, my man. Am I right?
Sure, they're worth their weight in saffron and gold and pony bones.
Diamond dust.
Yeah.
But no, that is a common misconception, though, right, that $2 bills are rare and you should hang on to them, which is kind of a funny little conundrum that we'll get into a little later. But why don't we start off with sort of the broad strokes? What's the history of the deuce?
Excellent. Excellent point to begin. The deuce or the tom first comes to the United States. It's first printed, that is, in 1862. Before that time, the states would allow banks to print their own currency, and that was pretty problematic. There's a good illustration of it in this documentary you and I watched called the $2 Bill documentary.
The $2 Bill documentary, a burst of creativity.
Right.
Sorry, not to try to be a dick to the filmmakers. It's very, very good, but come on, guys.
Right. That's by a writer and director, John Bernardo. And in there, they have some experts explain how the problem with bank-issued currency is that the further away you are from the bank physically, the less likely other institutions are to accept it at full face value.
They call them broken banknotes.
Right, yeah. So like a bank in Florida prints out a $2 bill or $5 bill, it doesn't matter. A bank in Maine might say, we'll give you 50 cents for it.
That's really funny. Or they might also just be like, get this trash out of my face.
Yeah, get this Florida rag out of here.
Well, it's sort of the same idea as, you know, trading in items. Like if, you know, like I say a shell or some sort of, you know, carved wooden piece is worth something, and then I take it to some other community and they disagree. You know?
What are you supposed to do?
Well, that's the thing. And this is interesting too, because if the bank that issued the note folded, it would become an obsolete note and become absolutely worthless.
Right.
But, you know, it takes time for word to travel, right? So it could even be weeks or months before someone farther away even found out that the bank had closed, and they might still give you, you know, 50% of its worth.
Yeah, so it's time dependent. It's not very sustainable. This changes, hopefully, for the United States in 1862 in March when they issue currency. They issue $1 bills and they issue $2 bills. And spoiler alert, $2 bills are the hot business. People in that time made an average of around $15 a month.
Interesting.
So if you have $2 and you're throwing down twos, that's going to be my new slang.
Yeah. Throwing down twos. Throwing down twos, dropping deuces.
Uh-huh.
Wait, that means something different.
Yeah, wait, no.
That means, yeah.
I think someone beat us to that one.
Yeah, it's true. But here, the reason that they changed this game up is because they needed to finance the war, right? The Civil War, that is. The Confederacy actually had a little forethought, and they issued their own currency. But the Union tried to borrow its way through the war at rapacious interest rates, right?
Yeah.
So in response, the U.S. passed these three legal tender acts that resulted in the issuing of, I believe, in the neighborhood of 450 mil in legal tender, which means what, Ben? What is legal tender?
So legal tender or legal tender note, we might be more familiar with it through the slang name greenbacks, which is way cooler and sexier than legal tender. These were replacements for what were called demand notes or earlier greenbacks. And essentially, they were a form of fiat currency. Legal tender means that they can be used for any debt. For like a public debt, perhaps the Union would face due to the atrocious interest rates in the war, or a private debt, except that I think they had one exception. Let's see. Ah, yes. This note is a legal tender for all debts, public and private, except duties on imports and interest on the public debt, and is redeemable in payment of all loans made to the United States. It's an IOU.
Oh, my gosh. Now, I thought fiat currency meant that it was backed by just faith in the government.
Yeah, the fiat currency means that it's backed by the institutional belief. So there are other things that will come along called silver certificates.
That's right. Not only that, there were notes backed by coin. There were those silver certificates. There were Federal Reserve notes, and there were national bank notes.
So you can find in various places online, you can find a picture of earlier currencies. We should caveat our timeline here because we said 1862 in March, that's when we have the first wide-scale printing of the $2 bills. There were other private entities like banks printing things prior to that. There were also other $2 bills before then, but they were much smaller in scope and distribution. Because by the time the U.S. broke with England, or by the time, excuse me, the American colonies at that point broke with England, they had been putting out paper currency for nearly a century, but they didn't, like continental currency existed, but they still hadn't gotten the formula quite right or worked out the process. And you can see in the National Museum of American History, you can see examples of this older currency, and it just looks piss poor.
Oh, dude, it looks like something you'd find in a pirate wreck.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. And no, I see now too, Ben, I have this note that they issued 49,000 $2 bills. And that was for, quote, bills of credit for the defense of America. It wasn't until almost a century later, on July 11th of 1862, that Congress decided to make that $2 denomination part of the nation's legal tender, as we discussed earlier. So I think we're up to date with the $2 bill. Let's talk a little bit about a rivalry.
I think I know where this is going.
A little beef.
Yeah. Two prominent founding fathers were what I like to call beefed up for a long time. They had this rivalry. Let's do a slow buildup to those beefed up rivals and explore what this bill actually looked like.
Yeah, and also like whose faces appeared, which will lead us to the beef in question. So these bills and all American legal tender use a process that's called intaglio printing.
Yeah,
which
fascinating.
It's really, really cool. It's like the opposite of relief printing, which means that it's got these fine lines, these deep etchings in these plates, and the designs are cut or scratched into these plates, and they can be copper or zinc or aluminum or plastic or magnesium or even like coated paper, and the ink is rubbed into these grooves, and then the paper is placed on top of it, and it requires great amounts of pressure to get that to take.
Yes.
And you end up with this really beautiful, fine, kind of embossed look.
And I think it takes 72 hours to do each side, at least here in the modern day.
Because of the drying.
Right, because there's so much ink on the $2 bill. If you look at either side of it, the printing, which is beautiful, is very detailed. Also, the coolest part is if you get a chance, go online and watch the engravers making the plates. What a weird, rarefied job.
It's pretty cool, too. You see them with those, what do you call that, a loop? Like a jeweler's loop?
Yeah, a little
monocle-looking thing where they're examining them to make sure they're perfect. And each plate has a specific code that ends up on the front and back of the note and can even tell you, like, where it was printed. And the thing about the two is that it actually has some of the most ornate intaglio printing of any U.S. note. And that's because the back of it has a very large scene in the middle, much, much more elaborate than some other bills that we're used to.
Yeah, a lot of people think that the back end, for lack of a better phrase, of the $2 bill is the signing of the Declaration of Independence. However, we are going to give you a gift, friends and neighbors. Now you will be armed with a small bit of trivia for your next soiree.
Let's just call it truth, man. Let's drop some knowledge, some truth.
It's time for $2 worth of truth bombs here, folks. It is not actually called the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, it's just the Declaration of Independence. And it's a painting by John Turnbull, and it just depicts the presentation of the signed document to the Continental Committee, of which Thomas Jefferson was a member. And I don't have the exact names, but some of the lesser players, I think there were like 42 people pictured in this, they had to do a redone version of this for the bill so that they could actually fit it all into that little picture hole. That's what I'm calling it. That's the picture hole.
You can call it the frame, maybe?
They kind of cropped out some dudes that they felt were superfluous. And the fact that I don't know their names is probably speaks volumes.
You can find, of course, a list of the names. It's not too far out there to say many of those names would be unfamiliar to the average, you know, U.S. kid today. But there are so many, we aren't going to go through the whole list. That would be, wait for it, ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got there.
I see what you did there.
But, you know, Ben Franklin's there. Thomas Jefferson, as you mentioned, Noel. Also, George Clinton is there.
Like of Parliament Funkadelic?
Yep, he's in the back. No, not that George Clinton. Unfortunately, he is.
He is a time traveler. Of funk.
But you can see the entire list of these people. The reason we're bringing this up is because if you look at the detail of this engraving, you can see how this separates a $2 bill in terms of sophistication from many other examples of U.S. currency. And one of the things that caught in our minds was, I don't know if you had ever heard this growing up, but people had told me in the past that $2 bills were bad luck.
You had mentioned that earlier, Ben, but I had not heard that. Does that mean I should stop sleeping on my mattresses full of $2 bills?
I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Bad luck or no, they're incredibly comfortable.
Well, of course, it's a comfortable mattress and a good night's sleep. The $2 bill, like all U.S. currency, is printed on very high-quality paper, but it may even be a mistake to call it paper.
Yeah. It's actually a fine blend of 75% cotton and 25% linen. In fact, some of my hoarded $2 bills I have sewn together into a delightful sheet set.
Oh, that's cool. You could also make a cape. That would be awesome.
A poncho?
Perhaps. No, not both. You can't wear them at the same time. That feels weird.
No, that would be tacky.
people wouldn't take you as seriously.
A poncho and a cape?
People would be like, that guy needs to be more definitive in his decisions.
Well, a poncho is kind of just like
a cape all around you.
A light cape. You know, yeah, exactly, yeah. That would be extreme to wear a poncho and
a cape. Do you think anybody has front capes? Oh, yeah, aprons. Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Yep.
Moving on, yeah, this stuff, it's got a surprising amount of cotton in it, which helps with the durability because when we think about it, if you had typical printing paper and stuff was printed on there, it would be easier to counterfeit, but it would be much more vulnerable to wear and tear.
And that's a whole big part of the processes they use to make these bills is to make them hard to duplicate. In fact, there's a whole nother step in the printing process where all of those little stamps and seals, those are all done in a separate, completely separate layer. So it's like a different set of ink, and it's just, you know, it's very, very difficult to successfully counterfeit.
And did you know? Yeah, and did you know that one company supplies all of the paper? It's a place called the Crane Company.
I did not know that, but it makes sense, right? If you could just get it anywhere, that'd be no good.
I know, but talk about a great business model, too. Those guys are set.
Yeah, and in the film that we're talking about, the documentary about the $2 bill, it shows this process, and the folks that craft and maintain these plates, they're really, like, you know, artisans. I mean, it really is a very high precision skill to be able to work with these. I mean, you're, like I said, they are doing a lot of it by hand, and it's very intricate form of printmaking, essentially. You
right.
know?
And this process has proven to be beneficial for the U.S. And a lot of other countries have modeled some behaviors off of this. But I want to get back to it. I don't want to get lost in the conversation.
Have we lost the beef?
We lost the bad luck.
Oh, the bad luck and then the beef.
Because I was, yeah.
Cool.
So a lot of us have heard that the $2 bill is associated with bad luck. And the question is, why? Because, as it turns out, it is not associated with any specific tragic event or a murder. And yes, the 42 people that are in the Trumbull painting, or engraving rather, are all dead. But that's just because that's what happens to people.
That's just the way of the old white dude.
It was not unusual.
No.
And we have to dig into a little bit of speculation to find where this superstition occurred. Superstition is the correct word. It's kind of like four-leaf clovers being lucky.
Yeah.
You know? So $2 bills were tied to brothels early in the 20th century.
Ooh.
You could use a $2 bill, and it kind of continues, but you could use a $2 bill for a, well, we're a family show. Maybe the best way to put it is a very quick experience.
Oh.
And you know what I mean? Not the premium treatment, whatever that was. Also, $2 used to be a standard betting price point in horse races.
That is pretty cool, man. I'm going to go ahead and drop this now just because it's neat and associated with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But there's a story in the modern day of $2 bills being associated with not brothels, but strip clubs.
Gentlemen's clubs.
I think we talked about this on a previous episode that Oregon, Portland, in fact, has the highest number of strip clubs, like, per capita or something like that.
Which is still so amazing. You know, I learned that from my Uber driver.
When you were visiting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that you mentioned that, and that kind of blew my mind. I was not expecting it. But as it turns out, there's one strip club in particular called Club Diablo, where the proprietor thought it would be really clever to get a whole bunch of $2 bills, because you can get them.
Oh, easily.
You just get them.
You can get them today.
Get them at the bank. And stain them in red ink to make them look like they were bloodstained. And then he would give them out as change, as kind of a gimmick in his establishment. But it turns out that they ended up circulating all over town, and people stopped taking them. And it became an issue.
It's like shame money. It's a scarlet letter,
exactly.
But a $2 bill.
And word got back that it was all as a result of this strip club impresario's little gimmick, which was meant to connect his place with the vampire film From Dusk Till Dawn by Robert Rodriguez and with Quentin Tarantino in it, where there is like a strip club, you know, populated by blood-sucking vampire ladies. And he actually got the law on him pretty hard. The CIA was investigating him, and the FBI actually came to the bar, and you know what? That wasn't enough to spook him. This guy, by the way, has an amazing strip clubby name of Johnny Zuckel.
Johnny Zuckel.
That's pretty
great. You got to say it with a little bit of rasp in your voice. Johnny Zuckel.
Johnny Zuckel. He was not shaken. It wasn't until, you know, things started to escalate that he finally backed down. But just wanted to drop that in there because I think that ties in with what you were saying. But let's go back to the back.
Back to the beef.
Back to the backy, back to the beef.
Let's see who's beefed up. So we mentioned that in terms of bad luck, the superstition probably originates more from people's perception of what the money was used for. And as Noel pointed out, that's still around a little bit today. But it's not associated with a tragedy. We did a little bit of foreshadowing. We mentioned the people on the back of the bill. But let's pay off the foreshadowing now. Who are the people on the front? Because they change over time.
Well, remember when we were talking about those early versions of currency, when all of the regions, I guess, or smaller areas could have their own, there were in those days around 1,000 completely unique $2 bills just floating around. And we mentioned what a problem that was. Then enter the Civil War. We now have legal tender. And the first $2 bill that's officially issued has Alexander Hamilton?
Alexander Hamilton?
Alexander Hamilton.
Like the guy from both the musical and also, fun fact, a real-life founding father of the United States.
It's very true. He, along with his nemesis, I don't know if that's fair. We're probably creating a bit of a false narrative there. But no, they had issues. They definitely had issues.
Yeah.
Hamilton and Jefferson, both founding fathers, they had very different ideas of what the government should be. Hamilton's Federalist Party wanted to centralize the government, wanted to represent the interests of trade, manufacturing, big city, you know, cosmopolitan ideas. Thought these were forces that would be crucial for progress in this new society. Strong central government, strong central currency, public debt. He didn't like radicals, didn't want them, didn't trust them, and he wanted to maintain good relationships with England because they would be a trading partner, you know?
Right, and Hamilton's economic plan for the nation included making a bank, a national bank like the kind that existed in England for the purpose of maintaining public credit. One of the very controversial things that he proposed at the time was to consolidate states' debts.
That's right.
And Jefferson and his faction, the Republicans, also known as the Republican Democrats at times, Republican-Democrats.
Wow, that's confusing.
It's a weird one. This faction took the position that, let's say, Virginia should not be responsible for debts accrued by New York.
So it's a very almost isolationist states' rights kind of vibe.
Federalist, anti-federalist, yeah.
Exactly. And if Hamilton is the city mouse, Jefferson is the country mouse, because the Republican Party wanted to mainly take care of agriculture and have an agrarian society, did not trust bankers, unconcerned with manufacturing and commerce. Mm-hmm. Again, like you said, Ben, all about these states' rights, self-sufficient communities. There's a great quote where he said, "I am not a friend to a very energetic government."
Right. So this is weird now because originally it is Alexander Hamilton on that first $2 bill.
And that was because, of course, he got his way.
He was the Secretary of the Treasury.
He got that national bank that was established in February of 1791. And then a little time goes by, 1862 rolls around, that deuce comes out. We got old Alex Hamilton's face on the front. Because like you say, he was the Secretary of the Treasury. And I guess maybe do you think he wanted it? Do you think he pushed for it? Do you think he cared? I don't know. Hard to say.
You know, you have to wonder, is it awkward to bring that up in conversation, to be the person who says, you know what would be a great portrait, guys, because we're doing portraits for these dollars? I'm a Secretary of the Treasury, so I think, like, we could do an eagle, but we should probably do me. That just seems very weird, and there's something Kanye West-ish about it.
You know, Kanye West is talking about, is it dragon power these days or eagle power?
Eagle power.
It should be eagle, but it's dragon power, I think.
It's dragon energy.
Dragon energy. Thank you. That's been Casey on the case.
And you may be asking yourself the question we asked ourselves off air, are dragon energy and tiger blood related? Did they play some sort of role in the publication of $2 bill? That is currently lost to history, but write in if you have any ideas.
You know what else is lost to history?
What's that?
Why did Jefferson swoop in and knock his old nemesis Hamilton off of the bill.
Yeah, in 1869, just a few years later, Thomas Jefferson's portrait replaces Hamilton, and it's used on the $2 note for the first time, and it's been used ever since.
But what I'm saying is, I have not found any sources saying why this happened. Why did Hamilton fall out of favor?
Right, and there's a really cool part in this documentary wherein one of the historians explains, when asked about all these different portraits that are on various forms of currency in the U.S., he says that the history is largely unwritten, and many times the best thing historians can say is just that it is ultimately up to the Secretary of the Treasury to decide. So Alexander Hamilton dies in 1795, so he certainly had no say, neither did Thomas Jefferson. Maybe our best bet is to ask ourselves who the Secretary of the Treasury was in 1869 when that picture change occurs. That's Hugh McCulloch from Indiana, the 27th Secretary.
Maybe he was beefed up with Hamilton too and just wanted to, you know, give his legacy a good thrashing.
Perhaps. Oh, and let me amend that same year, McCulloch was replaced by George S. Boutwell, who also may have been beefed up with Hamilton.
Very volatile times in the Secretary of the Treasury. And Ben, like you said earlier, these bills were popular because of the nature of wages and the two. Sort of a two would be like the way we might drop a hundo today.
Right.
You know, to really throw a weight around.
And there was also the gold panic in 1869.
That's right.
So maybe those events tied into it. So we should probably do an episode on some of those catastrophic financial disasters that occurred in the 1800s that remain relatively obscure today. You know, I love anything with panic in it. Gold panic.
Satanic panic.
Satanic panic. Panic at the Disco.
Manic panic. Remember that hair dye?
Yeah.
Skate shops back in the day.
Back at Gadzooks.
Did you ever dye your hair bright pink or red? Did you ever have never went through a phase like that?
Nope.
Our coworker and compatriot Holly Fry brought me some silver hair dye today because I have this really dope silver gray streak in my hair. Mm-hmm. I characterize it as being dope because I'm just a fan. It just isn't just the right place. People think that I did it on purpose, but I didn't. But Holly's like, you know what? You need to really take that up a notch and just make it like shiny silver. Like, I thought she was joking.
Like Rogue in the silver, not white.
Silver, so not white. Not, so she
totally like Rogue in X-Men.
But she presented me with a tube of hair stuff. So maybe.
Congratulations.
Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah. You're going to drop it in? You're going to
do
it over the weekend?
I don't want to hurt Holly's feelings.
Does it wash out or is it a permanent one?
It looks permanent. It looks
so it's like a commitment.
Mm-hmm. It's a real commitment.
Maybe try some of that washout dye first, see how you feel. Get some of the theater stuff that you just spray in your hair.
I was just sort of like, Holly, I don't think I'm not lacking. I'm good with this. She's like, no, it can be better. You can take it up a notch. But anyway, we digress.
Best of intentions.
Always. No, Holly's the best.
So, panics aside and motivations somewhat unknown or murky, the fact remains that Thomas Jefferson replaced Alexander Hamilton on the $2 bill in 1869.
And the fact also remains that over time, a good bit of time, the two sort of fell out of favor.
Yeah, and it had lower printing numbers starting in about the 1950s, and this is what led to, for a time, the $2 bill becoming the rarest current denomination of U.S. currency, and people started to hoard $2 bills, but as a result, this decreased the circulation even more.
That's right. There's a really great Mental Floss article about the curious case of the $2 bill, and they talk about the idea of the $2 bill sort of being surrounded by circular logic, one of those notions being that no one uses them because no one uses them.
Right. Yeah. So they're not printed because people are disinclined to use them, but people are disinclined to use them because they're not printed very often, right? Mm-hmm. And they're always something worth commenting on. Many people find them to be remarkable in some way or memorable, which is why at a modern day gentleman's club, gentleman's parlor, gentleman's lobby. I'm just thinking of different words for buildings.
It's a lounge.
There we go. In this article by Hannah Kieser, we do see that this logic works against at least the prevalence of the $2 bill, even if it does help its popularity. And this eventually leads to the Federal Mint just throwing up their hands and saying no more, right?
Yeah, it was in 1966 that they decided to discontinue this particular denomination of currency. So it stayed entirely out of production, out of print, for 10 years.
Yeah, and the Economic Review said that they were pulling this because people weren't using it. You know why? Because people were hoarding them in their houses.
It's true. But then, one fateful day, April 13th, the spring day of 1976.
Oh, the bicentennial.
That's right. The $2 bill was issued once again for the first time in a decade. And it was announced by President Nixon.
Nixon, the $2 bill's back, baby.
Well, what is that?
I think we're getting there.
That was crazy Nixon. Like wrestler Nixon.
He's kind of tough to say $2 bill. $2 bill.
I see you. See you really. You've got the cadence. You've got the tone more.
I think we've got a. You and I have some practice ahead of us.
I think if we combined our impressions, we'd be pretty close to the mark. But you've got the bark down.
Sort of Voltron the Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't
you've got
beat
the,
yourself up.
You've got the bark doing, and doing the quaver well. Down.
So we have some. A montage ahead of us, you and I, off air when we get Nixoned up.
Yeah, we're going to have a Nixon off.
Yeah, we heard your emails. At first, we thought you were joking, but I don't think people are joking, Noel. I think they want us to do go full Nixon.
Well, I think if we're going to do that, Ben, it probably has to be a bonus episode just for the super fans.
Yeah.
We don't want to alienate all you normies out there.
I was thinking about that. When someone tunes in for the first time and they're like, who are these
friends and neighbors?
Cartoonish
buffoons. Welcome to Ridiculous Hunter. Film producer, Casey Brown.
Even the sound effect has to be in a Nixon voice. Everything must be Nixon.
We could get the Nixon filter we've been talking about so much on our vision board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Nixon announces this, and there's a little bit of finger wagging from a New York Times article about the reintroduction where they say—
Ooh, dish it, Ben. I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't read this one.
Where they say public reluctance to accept and use the $2 bill was the principal cause of its discontinuance 9 years ago, and the main reason for that reluctance was the relative scarcity of the note in circulation. So to me, that comes off, like the tone of it is, okay, kids— America,
do better this time.
You can have it back, but remember what happened. You're giving a kid a toy back.
Here's the thing, though. America did not play nice, and there was a functional reason beyond just a delightful little bicentennial gimmick for releasing this. There was a gas shortage, I believe, and they needed to release a certain value amount of currency, but not. They didn't want to print as many ones, so they were able to print like half as many twos. And I'm no economist, but I guess that's what you do.
Yeah.
So what is this going to accomplish, Ben, is my question to you.
Well, it's going to give you more bang for your buck, about twice as much in terms of printing cost.
Exactly twice as much.
Exactly twice as much. Also not an economist, we should note. But this gives an injection of cash into an economy that is in dire need.
It's true. And it just was scarce because it hadn't been in circulation for 10 years. So, you know, I guess they I don't know how they introduce currency. They must do it a little at a time, obviously, you know, over a large area.
I think it's a t-shirt cannon.
Okay. That'd be cool.
I think it's...
Man, I mean, like sort of like Joker in Batman with like trust, you know, and he's got the gas and the balloons and all that. That'd be cool.
That's probably the most efficient way to do it. Again,
have a bicentennial parade.
Yeah, again, we're not economists, but we would be great at this parade.
Man,
and now though, you're right. People didn't play nice because they started to see this as much of a collectible as it was a functional piece of currency.
Exactly. So people didn't spend it.
No, they like went to the post office and got a stamp to show the date that they got it. And
like then a notary type stamp?
Like a postage stamp and a rubber cancellation stamp, and it made it seem like a keepsake.
Interesting. See, it sort of to me sounds like when they released those fancy commemorative coins and a lot of, I mean, I wonder if that creates a circulation problem with quarters. Probably not.
I don't know. They made a bunch of quarters.
Yeah, that's true. But again, doesn't quite accomplish what they were after, but they don't pull it again. There's still $2 bills in circulation. I don't think they print them particularly often. They certainly print them less often than, you know, the standard denominations that we're used to. I don't have an exact figure on that.
I believe, again, from the excellent documentary that we checked out by John Bernardo, I believe that one of the experts at the Federal Mint says that since 1956, there have only been 9 printings of the two. They're so cool about it. They don't call it a $2 bill. They call it the two.
The two.
Which makes it sound so classy.
Dude,
so,
I learned a new word.
What
today
is it?
Too. I think you probably know this one, but numismatics.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
Or a numismatist.
A collector and enthusiast of currency and coins.
It's true.
And they have an awesome convention in Florida with an acronym that I don't have to ask. I already know you and I both love it. It is the Florida United Numismatists Convention, or
fun, baby. Sounds like a barrel of laughs to me.
Oh God, I hope they are as proud of that as I am.
Oh man, yeah, no, it's good. You should be proud, and they should be proud that you're so proud of them. But here's the thing: there's a lot of misconceptions even today about the $2 bill.
Mm-hmm.
People still think they're scarce, and while it may be scarce compared to other denominations, there are over 1 billion $2 bills in circulation today.
Right, right. You can, as we mentioned earlier, you can go to a bank and specifically request a large amount of $2 bills. And it turns out that you probably wouldn't be the first person to do that, because $2 bills in recent years, especially post, you know, the reintroduction of the bill, they have become signs of protest, right? Not just this is different from the gentleman's lounge throwing red paint on stuff.
As more of a marketing ploy, I guess, right?
Yeah, I agree. But you and I and our researcher, Christopher Hasiotis, found some really cool examples of $2 bills being used as a protest, right?
Did you hear the one from the mid-80s around an event called Black Dollar Days?
Black Dollar Days. No, school me. Lay it on me, bro.
Well, the NAACP had this event that they dubbed Black Dollar Days. That was from September 2nd through the 9th of 1985, where in order to show the spending power, the massive spending power
of
the African-American community,
I remember
what'd they do?
They urged black consumers in 29 cities across the country to only spend $2 bills and $1 Susan B. Anthony coins to demonstrate how much economic heft they had. With Raymond Johnson Jr., the president of the NAACP's LA chapter, saying that blacks spent well over $100 billion on goods and services from non-minority firms in 1984.
And yet corporations purchased less than 1% of that amount from black vendors. He's saying, we're not asking for anything except our fair share. So in using those $2 bills and those Susan B's, they collected somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million in purchases in that very short span of time.
And that's a noble one. You know, that's something I think everybody can really get behind, because that's a way to speak truth to power. You know, vote with your purchasing ability. As heartless as it sounds, that makes a difference to corporations. They're not the only people protesting either. We found a case where Nudist did something very similar.
I did not see this one, Ben. Please.
So in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Is that where they make the butter?
It should be, but I think they just didn't check the list of cities that already existed when they named it Land O'Lakes.
Do the nudists cover their bodies in butter?
You know what? Statistically, probably at least one of them has.
It's okay. You can use it as like a sun tanning solution.
I thought that was dangerous, doesn't it?
Eh, whatever, man. You just live your life. Tell me about the butter town.
We're here for a good time, not a long time, right? Yeah, so these nudists in Land O'Lakes, Florida, Central Florida, launched a campaign where they decided to also buy everything with $2 bills to show the local merchants how much of an impact they make. And this was...
Just nudists in general?
This specific community.
This is the nudist dollar.
It was an idea created or proposed by Chuck Foster, who runs the Caliente Resort. I thought you'd like that name.
That sounds spicy. And, you know, in a stunning turn of events, I feel like we're going from most culturally valuable to least.
Yeah.
Maybe, well, actually, I don't know. I would maybe flip yours with the one I'm about to talk about. Maybe. Tell me what you think.
All right, yeah.
There's a local organization in Alger County in Michigan that decided to mount a statewide effort to show their support of medical cannabis and push for a bigger, more widespread adoption of legalization in the state. And that was back in 2008. And correct me if I'm wrong, is Michigan gone legal?
So many places, it seems, are changing that quickly. I think it's up for political debate. Marijuana legalization may be on their November ballot.
Ah, you know what, though? But they do have medical cannabis.
Okay.
That is on the books.
Okay.
In 2008, this was not on the books. This is what they were pushing for. Can't necessarily credit the $2 scheme for making that happen, but it certainly did a good job of showing lawmakers something that's very important with these cases often, is that people spend money. People who nudists spend money.
Sure.
African Americans spend money.
Sure.
Weedheads spend money.
And everybody spends money, and everybody should be treated fairly. We saw another example where gay rights advocates took the same approach using $2 bills. And this was a reaction to the Proposition 8 initiative in California. Remember that?
That was a rough one, yeah.
Yeah. And so they did some stuff that I thought it was really cool. There were people protesting by calling in gay, quote-unquote gay, to work.
Sure.
And they did the same thing as the NAACP did with $2 bills, and they were transparent in citing the NAACP's earlier work.
Oh, that's cool. Credit where credit is due. Yeah, and this article from AOL by Jason Cochran titled Gay Rights Advocates Ponder Best Way to Flex Their Economic Power, they decided that this $2 bill method, which if I wasn't clear, that's also what the pot people did, was decide they would spend only $2 bills to show their economic impact directly to the community, because, you know, shopkeepers and banks, and you count the $2 bills that you got, you can see where the impact is coming from, and you know who spent those. But with the whole calling in gay to work thing, a lot of members of the community didn't think that was a very focused effort, and it seemed kind of counterproductive, and it didn't really hit the way they wanted to, which was to show their actual spending power, which has been estimated in America that the gay community contributes something like $700 billion to the economy.
Wow. And I believe this also happened in 2008, didn't it? It's the same year as the Michigan protest.
Right you are, my friend.
What a time. What were we doing? I don't think I even had any $2 bills.
In 08? Well, I still had my mattresses.
Yeah.
I was probably napping on them at the time.
But I count those more as furniture for you than, like, maybe emergency currency. Maybe. But it better be a real emergency.
I like to think of it more as immersion currency, because I just roll around in it, man.
Yeah.
Feels good.
And also, we want to be clear that despite dirty mattress jokes, Noel does wash his currency. We don't want to scare anybody by letting you know just how many really gross statistics are out there about paper money.
You're saying I launder my money?
I'm saying you literally launder your money in the best possible way.
I will say this. When I'm not sleeping on my stack of $2 bill-filled mattresses, I sleep on a Casper, baby.
I knew you were going to do it. Yes, Casper mattresses. Objectively, great mattresses.
Very nice.
So there's something that just occurred to me as we were talking about this protest. One of the reasons that $2 bills might also be a great way of showing your community or your group's economic weight is because there's no There's no drawer space for a $2 bill in the typical cash register.
I forgot that point entirely, Ben. It's very true. It's another reason that it's probably never taken off. It's clearly never been fully embraced by the economic community.
By big cash register.
Big registers, yeah. And here's the thing too, Ben. Even today, you'll hear lots of stories about people just being very confused about this currency, this denomination. In fact, there's a story about a guy who, in his own kind of little protest, mm-hmm. a little more of a mini protest, Best Buy apparently refused to install his son's car stereo for the gratis price they had promised him.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, no, actually, you have to pay for it. We're going to call the cops if you don't come in. This guy's name was Mike Balesta, and this was reported by the Baltimore Sun. The 57-year-old Mike Balesta found himself in lockup. He actually was handcuffed to a pole for 3 hours after he decided to give Best Buy the old middle fingy and pay with all twos.
Because the person he tried to pay first didn't recognize this. She went to get the manager. The manager said, these are counterfeit. I've already called the police.
Yep.
And I believe he said the cop was, he throws in that the cop was young as well.
Sure. Yeah, he was young. And they kept him handcuffed to this pole until they can get the damn Secret Service to show up. Can you imagine if you were that Secret Service agent, how annoyed you would be to be called out to a Best Buy?
It's crazy. I think a lot of people—
they were probably in the lockup at the time, but you get my meaning.
I think a lot of people aren't aware that the Secret Service is the organization that supervises counterfeiting.
It's true, because under federal law, anyone who intentionally uses counterfeit money can get up to 20 years in the clink and is also subject to a fine. A steep fine, I imagine.
Right, I would imagine so. And this this has always been a fascinating thing to us, the idea that the Secret Service of all groups has that specific task, because one would reasonably assume it would be the FBI. Or,
well, they can get involved too.
They can. They can get involved too, but specifically with counterfeiting. So that's like why in our earlier examples, the FBI got called.
That's right.
But in this example, the Secret Service. You know what? We should write to some Secret Service folks, see if we can talk to them about this.
I don't want to get in that system, man. I don't want to be on a list. Being a letter writer, being some kind of agitator.
Being some kind of anachronistic Luddite
No.
who uses a pen.
See, that's exactly what happened to Denise and Neil, an eighth grader at the Krista McAuliffe Middle School outside of Houston. She attempted to pay for her school lunch with a $2 bill. Oh, by the way, we haven't talked about how $2 bills, favorites of grandparents the world over.
Oh, yeah? Is that true?
Yeah, they'll give you a $2 bill and your birthday card. You know, they think it's cute.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah.
But anyway, this was not cute because her grandmama gave her this $2 bill, and her grandmother's name was Sharon K. Joseph, and the cafeteria workers at the school did not believe that it was real. They said they'd never seen $2 bills in their life, and she was sent to something called the police office. Because this particular school district—
That sounds like something I'd make up in improv.
I know, seriously. This particular school district in Houston, or outside of Houston, Fort Bend Independent School District, has its own police force.
That's like a step above the police store.
The Fort Bend ISD. Apparently the officer told her that she was going to be in big trouble for using this bill, which they believed to be counterfeit.
Wow.
So still a real stigma surrounding the two, the deuce.
Tom? The Tom, you're right. It is still in circulation. It is not illegal to use it. It's not counterfeit. And when you think about it, most counterfeiters who would be professional level counterfeiters are not going to mess with a small denomination. They want 50s, 100s,
stuff
like that.
Not only that, they're not going to mess with one that's going to cause so many people to make a face.
Right. You want something that slides in unnoticed. There's something else I found that was pretty interesting. If you think people in the U.S. are obsessed with the $2 bill, then hoo boy, are you in for an adventure in Ecuador? According to author Nina Porzucki, who wrote Why Are Ecuadorians Obsessed with the $2 Bill for PRI, in Ecuador, this bill is even more rare and people believe that it is good luck. It is some of the best good luck. It functions like a four-leaf clover. Ecuador's had the U.S. dollar as official currency since 2000, and the problem that they run into is a bank in Ecuador will order money from the Federal Reserve here in the States if they need 5s, 10s, 50s, and $2 bills are not a priority. So they're even less frequently found there than they are here. And that feedback loop happens again. People save them because they think they're good luck.
But we also have these sort of $2 bill freedom fighters, don't we? People like Heather McCabe, who runs a blog called Two Buckaroo. And her whole life's mission is to dump $2 bills back into circulation and see people's reactions when she tries to spend them. There's an article about Ms. McCabe in the New York Times, and she was also in that documentary that we talked about. But this one is called $2 Bill is Oddity, but Some Love the Tender. It describes Heather McCabe as being on a one-woman mission to revitalize the quirky greenback through deliberate, casual use. It also cites this guy, Matthew Zaklad, who pours apparently close to 7,000 notes into circulation each year. And McCabe apparently has been turned away from businesses, told to pay with something else in different bars, ooh, and is constantly being asked by people that she encounters, can I buy this wallet full of $2 bills that you have? Because they still think that it's kooky and rare.
And they have no idea that you can go down to the Fun Convention. Again, that's an acronym. And buy.
Doesn't that sound amazing? The Fun. I want to go to the Fun Convention.
Mm-hmm. And buy a wallet made out of $2 bills. I think it was $40.
Okay.
But there are other neat facts that we discovered about the $2 bill. It's often used as a tracer by like mom and pop stores to track robberies. They keep the $2 bill at the bottom of the drawer. They write the serial number down somewhere else. And then they just wait. $2 bills used to be handed out at Monticello, former home of President Jefferson.
That's right, because he got all the glory after they kicked mm-hmm. old Hammy off.
You have no control who lives, who dies, who tells your $2 story. Steve Wozniak buys $2 bills by the sheet from the Treasury Department and makes his own little coupon book, essentially, out wow. of them so he can rip them out.
Really?
Yeah, it's so weird.
Is it just for grandpa purposes? Does he just want to be able to rip one out to give to his
I don't
grandkids?
Know. Maybe he hates leafing through things.
That's very interesting.
But Noel, you know, I've got to tell you, I had a bunch of stuff on other weird currency, but maybe we should save that for a different episode because this rabbit hole is going deep, deep, deep.
A lot deeper than I thought it would, my friend.
Yeah, a lot deeper than we thought it would. Do you have a $2 bill at your home currently?
I do not.
I have one. Wait, no. No, that's not true. I have three.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're flush.
Well, I planted them.
What?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, I have three. I think they actually, now that I think about it, I think they did come from an older relative. But they're, I think they might be pre-76. I can't remember. But be that as it may, we'd like to hear your $2 bill stories because one thing McCabe did in her blog is she started asking people to tell her a story about the $2 bill, and she got some very interesting responses.
It's a really cool blog. The one I'm looking at right now isn't a personal story as much as it is a news story. The headline is $2 bill leads to heroin bust in New Jersey. When a driver was pulled over for tossing a lit cigarette out a car window, the police officer reported seeing a rolled up $2 bill with white residue on it. The driver and passenger were asked to step out of the vehicle. Prior to doing so, the driver made an attempt to hide the bill, according to the police officer, who later located the bill in a cigarette pack containing heroin. But what happened to the $2 bill?
Dun, dun. Yeah. So again, we want to hear your stories, your personal experiences, your memories. Did you grow up being told that a $2 bill was good luck or bad luck? If so, why? Do you think that the bill should continue? Because one thing I really wish we could have hit in this episode was the debate over whether or not to abolish the penny.
I know you have very strong feelings about that, largely because you probably don't like touching pennies.
Right, yeah.
And we didn't even touch on the fact that Georgia Tech, our hometown nerd football team.
Yeah.
You ever wondered about that?
I went there.
You went there?
Yeah.
Well, you weren't on the football team, though.
No, not that I recall.
So do they just let people go there just to be on the football team? Or is the football team just like full of genius engineers and diplomats?
From what I remember, they have a pretty high bar academically.
Wow. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be dismissive. I just want to understand how this stuff works. But yeah, they have a rivalry with Clemson, and they actually refused to play each other out of protest. And the alumni stamped $2 bills with the Clemson tiger paws and used them around Atlanta to illustrate the money that the Tiger fans were spending at these events. So once again, The $2 bill rears its quirky head.
And perhaps you can be part of a $2 bill protest movement in the future.
Have you been part of one?
Yeah, and if you're planning one, what are you protesting? We might just join you. Let us know. You can write to us directly. We are ridiculous at howstuffworks.com. As always, a massive thanks to Casey Pegram and Alex Williams, who composed our track.
And not to mention A-plus ace number one researcher Christopher Hasiotis for holding our hands down this rabbit hole deep dive. Shallow dive? Medium dive.
I thought it was a pretty good dive. You know, I rate us more on form. So I thought it was a good form.
I made a tiny splash.
Right. Oh, man. How come no one does a cannonball at the Olympics? I always wondered that when I was a kid. But cannonballs aside, stay tuned for our next episode when we will ask, how related are U.S. presidents in terms of familial relations?
Oh, I thought I was going to say they're presidents.
They're all presidents.
They're all presidents.
You know, you could try, but name one U.S. president who was not president.
That's tough.
It's a tough one.
Nigh impossible. But no, I see where you're going with this, Ben, and that does sound like a good time.
So stay tuned. Write to us. We always love to hear from you. You can also join our community on Facebook. We are Ridiculous Historians. That's where you can see Noel and Casey and I dropping by with the odd childhood photo, maybe some karaoke clips, and most importantly, hearing your suggestions for future topics.
That sounds good to me, my friend.
Casey, can we go out on a cash register ring?